All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. It's December, the last month of 2020. The coronavirus pandemic is well into its second wave, and thanks to Trump, Pence, and their gang of fascists, the first wave never really ended. It's very possible that 300,000 people in the U.S. alone will have died by the end of the year. And speaking of Trump, Pence, and their fascist supporters, it looks like we are now in the cornered rat stage of the Trump regime. A cornered loser rat. Yes, Trump is increasingly isolated if you look at the prominent people in the system. But over 73 million people voted for him. And many, if not most of those 73 million, are convinced by the lies told by Trump and his loyal stooges that the election was stolen. Tens of millions of people in the U.S. believe that the word of the beloved leader is all that matters and that real ballots cast by real people in the real world don't mean anything. So, whether or not he leaves office on January 20th, we still have a huge Nazi problem. And if you look at history, Hitler did not come to power the first or second time that he tried, but he and his stormtroopers didn't go away. So today's show will speak to all of these questions. At the back end of the show, we'll hear a number of statements by Bob Avakian, the leader of the revolution and the architect of the new communism. Now, these excerpts address some of the key questions we're facing. Why did so many people vote for a fascist? Could a fascist form of rule be imposed on the U.S.? Can it happen here? Where did this fascist movement come from? These questions and others are also addressed by the first speakers. We'll hear from the participants in a forum by Refuse Fascism. What just happened? Trump, America, and the danger of fascism. The participants were Andy Z, host of RNL, Revolution Nothing Less Show, co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org, and spokesperson for Revolution Books. Jeff Charlotte, author of This Brilliant Darkness and the Family, a professor of English at Dartmouth. And Indy Samarajiva, a writer living in Colombo, Sri Lanka. He is the author of a provocative essay, I Lived Through a Stupid Coup, America is Having One Now. You've already lost. This is what Americans need to understand. We'll first hear an introduction by Coco Das, followed by the Refuse Fascism Pledge to the People of the World.
Refuse Fascism was formed in December of 2016 with this mission: to build a movement of people coming from diverse perspectives, united in our recognition that the Trump-Pence regime poses a catastrophic danger to humanity and the planet, and that it is our responsibility to drive them from power through nonviolent protests that grow every day until our demand is met. We raised the slogan, "In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. The Trump-Pence regime must go." And then we hit the streets, organizing protests and joining others to oppose the injustices of this regime, organizing and bringing the message to people that there is a way to stop this nightmare. Imagine thousands growing to millions in the streets of cities and towns across the country, with marches, candlelight vigils, rallies, students, religious forces, immigrants, everyone with a heart for humanity in the streets and not backing down from their demand that a fascist regime must go. Our actions would reflect our respect for all of humanity and the want, in stark contrast to the hate and bigotry of the Trump-Pence regime. A determined struggle that doesn't yield and won't be provoked could create a serious political crisis, compelling those in power to respond to our struggle from below, leading to a situation where this illegitimate regime could be removed from power. Make America Great Again is a 21st century fascist program of manifest destiny, the belief that American power is justified and inevitable, no matter how it is achieved, because it is ordained by God. It's America first, wrapped in the flag and Mike Pence's Bible taken literally, built on a triad of white supremacy, misogyny, and xenophobia. For almost 4 years, we have been bringing this problem and solution into the public debate and the public square, We have opposed every outrage coming under attack ourselves from fascist thugs trying to shut us up, but again and again they fail to provoke or intimidate us. We have gone on trial and fought and won against vengeful prosecutions that threatened the right of nonviolent protest. And we continually analyzed the changing situation and issued statements whenever there was a leap in this fascist program. And the fact is that Trump, the racist grabber who made an unholy alliance with Christian fascists fighting to take away a woman's right to control her own reproduction, should never have been a legitimate candidate. And while at the moment it looks likely that Trump will leave the White House without us having to stay in the streets demanding the removal of his regime, he is still there and he is doing tremendous damage. And the fact is that we have a Nazi problem in this country. Some 73 million people voted for it. Their leader is still in power and waging an all-out battle to overthrow the election he clearly lost. His followers maraud through the streets and raise $2 million for a teenage killer's bail. They destroy Black Lives Matter murals and chant, "Say his name, Donald Trump," spitting on the anguished cries of Black people whose lives are so routinely cut down by police in this country. And they don't, for the most part, wave swastikas around and salute Hitler. But we have a Nazi problem in this country as deeply as the German people had a Nazi problem in the 1930s. Their minds waterlogged with conspiracy theories. They take lies as truth, spread hate and bigotry. They wrap themselves in several flags, the American, Confederate, and Blue Lives Matter flags, and use the Bible as a weapon of violence and repression. They are a grotesque expression of the worst of this country, of its ugly narcissism, its thuggish militarism, its ignorance and refusal to give a shit about the rest of the world. They carry the torch of slavery, genocide, and Jim Crow terror. Gunned up and maskless, they exalt above all the right to kill. Trump lost the election. They lost. We poured into the streets to celebrate, but they will not go quietly into the night. Fascists have and can come back from defeat, and when they do, they are stronger, more prepared, and more filled with vengeance. With his unhinged audacity, Trump still dominates the airwaves, turning an election that was decisive into a debate. Every day that he remains in power is an unrelenting barrage of lunacy. Every day is another day of the unthinkable and unprecedented, said out loud and acted upon. Every day is 1,000 more deaths from COVID. And the humanity and the morality of a portion of these 73 million people is so hollowed out that they cannot even mourn the dead. And what about the rest of us who did not want this but learned to live with it? Having Trump's hands off the levers of power will be a great thing for humanity. But if we had flooded the streets in nonviolent protest and demanded the regime must go, could we have prevented the deaths of 250,000 people, the detention of 500,000 immigrant children over 3 years? We don't yet have a full accounting of the lives that have been lost and destroyed under this regime, from the Muslim ban, family separation, environmental protections overturned, civilians killed from US bombings without even lip service about collateral damage, and unleashed white supremacist terror. And we don't know yet what will happen over the next 2 months. But we do know that it won't be soon enough that Trump and Pence leave the White House, and they, their movement, must never be allowed to come back. So before we hear from each of our speakers, you're going to hear a pledge to the people of the world. This appeared as a full-page ad in the New York Times the Monday after Biden's win was announced in the media. and it was signed by many people of prominence, including Cornel West, Leila Hathaway, Noam Chomsky, Lily Wachowski, Arturo O'Farrell, Jody Sweetin, Alyssa Milano, and many others. And in this pledge, you will hear what we must continue to oppose and how we can build on the victory of Trump's electoral defeat and bring this fascist program to a halt. I want to thank you all for being here. Let's begin.
In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. The Trump-Pence regime must go.
We pledge that we will speak, we will stand, we will shout and march together every day to stop a regime that imperils the people of the world and the earth itself.
We will take to the streets day after day and call forth others. We demand Trump-Pence out now. We will not stop until they're gone.
We do not comply with a regime putting targets on the backs of Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, denying women rights and control of their own bodies, forcing LGBTQ people back into the closet.
We do not accept a society ruled by hate and bigotry, ignorance and brutality, demeaning and cursing other people's countries, and threatening them with destruction.
There can be no more children torn from parents and locked in cages. No more fire and fury from the mouth of a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear trigger. No more mass COVID death from science-hating lunacy.
No more law and order of official terror by bullets, batons, and tear gas.
No longer can we live with howling mobs resurrecting Jim Crow, fascist thugs attacking our protests.
The right to vote stolen by defenders of the Confederacy.
We will not worship the flag or accept the theocracy.
We will not become collaborators on a march to a racist genocide.
We will not hand the future to scorchers of the planet.
4 more years, 4 more months, and it could be too late. Too late to change the course of history as the Trump-Pence regime sabotages the election and drags humanity to the very edge of extinction itself.
Here and now, we pledge to unite in our millions, rising together in nonviolent resistance to stop a great horror.
We pledge to stay in the streets, overcoming fear and uncertainty until this American fascism is brought to a halt.
We pledge our determination to prevail over a regime that imperils the people of the world and the earth itself.
In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
This is the Michael Slate Show. We've just heard from Coco Das of the National Editorial Board of Refuse Fascism and the Pledge to the People of the World. Next, we'll hear Indi Samarajiva, introduced by Coco Das.
Our first speaker will be Indi Samarajiva. For those of you who may have joined us late, Indi is the author of an essay that was all over the internet this past weekend called I Lived Through a Stupid Coup. America is having one now. You've already lost. This is what Americans need to understand. Hi, Indi, how are you?
Thank you for having me. And I'd also like to thank Refuse Fascism for making a pledge to humanity and to the world, because we are watching what's happening in America and we're like, WTF, It's quite, and it's not just that, like, oh, we're watching this dumpster fire over there. This fire is heating up our air. I would say in Sri Lanka, one of our major issues is climate change. Within my daughter's lifetime, all the beaches I know could be gone. And while America is fascist, we cannot face this existential threat to all of our existence. So while I think it is very important for you to march and to resist this, I would also like you to remember that you're not necessarily marching for us, but you're marching with us. And people of the world, who I'm not like the UN Secretary General or whatever, I'm just a person who lives in the world. But people who live in the world, your immigrants, just people you know, we have a lot to offer you and a lot that can help you in your struggle. I think your struggle against oppression is also our struggle, and I think this requires international solidarity. So as to the question at hand, you're asking what happened in America. And I think that's much easier to understand if you understand when. I grew up in America. I grew up, you know, pledging allegiance to the flag. And I grew up thinking that America is 225 years old. But if you look at it by any objective standard, American democracy is only 60 years old. And your founders are Black people. They're not those white people, which was only the 6% of the population that could vote at the time. Almost every country in the world defines modern democracy. I don't mean Greek, Roman, slave democracy. Modern democracy, we define that as one person, one vote. And you didn't get that until 1965. And, you know, Rosa Parks is more your founding mother than Thomas Jefferson. And one thing that perspective can give you is the fact that you're a young democracy, and older democracies like Sri Lanka or, say, Germany have gone through some of the shit you're going through now, and we have lessons which might be relevant to you, which can save you a lot of pain. I know American exceptionalism makes most Americans somewhat incapable of learning from the past or from anywhere else in the world, but I assume that this audience is a bit different. So there's some lessons there based on what's happening to you now, which has happened to us before. So post-independence, you may have noticed that a lot of countries in the world, a lot of young democracies went through a lot of conflict, a lot of struggle. And I think Americans looked at them and said, oh, look at those holes, they're like bad people. But now you're going through it yourselves, almost on the same schedule. So you guys have Make America Great Again. In 1948, we had Sinhala First. I'm Sinhalese, and that prioritized my race over other races. And this happened all over the world. In Malaysia, there's the Bumiputra policy. In India, the BJP is doing it now with Hindutva. This, what you're going through now, is not necessarily new. And I think this is somewhat almost a characteristic of democracy. The majority figures out that they can use race or whatever it is to sort of game the whole system and take over and get all the stuff for themselves. And it's not like, I mean, I think races are bad people, but it's not just that they're bad people. This is also a rational political act, which many other democracies have done as well, including mine. And being on, I guess, being your elder, I suppose, being on the other end of it, I would say don't go this way. It does not end well. Race politics, I think, is like, it's like the crystal meth of politics. Like, it gets you high really fast, but then pretty soon your teeth fall out. And we got thrown into 30 years of war, which it started when I was a baby and it continued until I was an adult. And that was just an insane waste of life and time. And we're still fairly traumatized by it. And I can see you guys heading down the same path. And I think a lot of people would warn you this. And I would say resist now while you can. You know, later resistance gets more costly. People get killed. I would say resist peacefully while you can, because the costs long-term are much more than you can bear. So I'll talk more directly about what's exactly happening to you right now, which is your coup attempt. I know that Americans don't like, there's this almost phobia of using words, right? Like the word fascism, like, oh no, we can't use that. We might like offend dead Nazis. Or we can't use the word coup, we might like what is the cost to using these words? The point of these words is to spur you into action against something which has tremendous long-term consequences. And as an outside observer, I don't know what else you call something where the president does not accept the results of an election and takes control of the military. That's a coup, and you need to resist it accordingly. So what happened in Sri Lanka is our minority party working with the president took over the parliament. And they threw chili powder and they threw chairs and they threw books at people. And it was a damn mess. And it lasted for 7 weeks and we were in the streets protesting. And then based on the courts being able to count, you know, a majority in parliament, just as I assume your electors can count a majority of your stupid electoral college, they overturned that coup. And then we were like, oh, cool, we won. And then we essentially went home. We put the same dumbass parliament back, and they just like got their cars and their privileges, and they went about it. And what I would like to tell you is, I know you're resisting now. My sort of severe warning for you is you must continue resisting. If you don't continue and prosecute these people, as countries like South Korea have done, they will keep coming back. There's a line in The Sopranos where Robert De Niro is talking about Nicky, and he says, you know, if you beat him, he'll come back with a bat. If you come with a knife, he'll come with a gun. If you come with a gun, you better kill him because he'll just keep coming back. And you must understand that this is your Republican Party. They are like Nicky Santoro in the casino. They are crazy, and they will keep coming back. And you must resist them. And South Korea, I think, stupid dog, hold on. I'll keep talking. South Korea has shown this because South Korea has prosecuted all of its living ex-presidents. So it is possible to hold elites accountable. And you must hold elites accountable because I would tell you, based on my experience, they keep coming back. I'm sorry, I left. The dog is a neoliberal and a maniac. You must hold them accountable. Otherwise, I'm telling you what happened in Sri Lanka is those guys, once the coup failed, they stopped screaming. And they're actually in power now. They came back. So what they did is what the Republicans are going to do to you is they're going to set your system on fire. And they're going to say, oh, look, it's on fire. You need a change of government. Vote for us. And that's exactly how they come back. And so you must, like, keep resisting, but you must resist the complacency to say, oh, good, we got Trump out, like, it's all over. I swear to God, it's not over. For us, it was a generational struggle. As in, I was a baby when it started. As in, I'm not, like, if I'm a time traveler, I'm not you, I'm your children. You have to think about your children, because that's how long this struggle will take. And I'm telling you, because America is not exceptional, because you're actually behind us in the timeline. And this is the struggle that Sri Lanka and many other young democracies have gone through. So I would recommend, as you go forward, you need international solidarity. So I would seek out voices around you, like talk to your doctors, your professors, your cab drivers, the people cleaning up after you, the people making your food. Like, talk to these people. They have information that can really help your lives. And I would say reach out for different voices online, which is possible now because, hell, we're like all, you know, a few inches on a screen. I would say reach out to different people because some people are ahead of you in the timeline. And some of this information is very helpful. I would also pay attention to South Korea because Americans seem capable of understanding them because they're rich. And they seem to be sort of ahead of you in the timeline. And they're also really aggressive about their democracy. People say they're this like Confucian society, but they overthrow their government and like imprison their leaders all the time. And what they're doing right now is, I think, especially useful for what you have to do, which is you have to prosecute these people, or I swear to God, they will keep coming back.
That was Indy Samarajiva, a writer living in Colombo, Sri Lanka. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. Now we're going to hear from Jeff Charlotte, a scholar who has been studying and exposing Christian nationalists for over a decade, and he'll be followed by Andy Z.
Next, we're going to hear from Jeff Charlotte. And Jeff Charlotte, again, is the author of The Brilliant Darkness, This Brilliant Darkness and the Family, and a professor of English at Dartmouth College. Jeff, we're so happy that you could join us tonight. How are you doing?
Good. Hi, Coco. Good to be with you. Thanks. Thanks for including me in this.
Good. All right. Well, I've been following you on Twitter. You've had a lot to say about this coup, so I'm really eager to hear what you're going to be telling our audience tonight.
Yeah, thank you. And I think I want to echo Indy and thank Refuse Fascism and also thank Indy for that essay, which is, to me, just sort of become one of the definitive pieces of writing about this moment. And so if you haven't read it, stay tuned with us for a little while, but then go first thing right away and read it. I thought I would speak, what I could bring to this is maybe having spent longer than I'd like, almost two decades sort of reporting on, among other things, the movement that we now call Christian nationalism. And I thought I would begin with an apology. In 2008, I published a book called The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, which is, I'm plugging it just so you sort of have the context. As you can see, there's a Netflix documentary made out of it too, talking about the oldest and arguably most influential Christian nationalist organization in the United States with global impact. And when we talk about how we're connected, I think of Mike Pence, and who Mike Pence first came on my radar through his involvement through this organization and arms deals in Sri Lanka, which was the, you know, to look at these American right wing movements and understand that they are simultaneously provincial and global. But in that book, I had a chapter called the F word, and the F word, of course, is fascism. And I argued that fascism, as it was understood in the European context, which is where most Americans get it from, because they don't realize that there's fascisms all around the globe, that wasn't going to happen in the United States. I didn't say that we were immune from trouble. There's more than one kind of bad under the sun. But I thought that, in fact, what would prevent that from happening would be American fundamentalism, Christian fundamentalism, which just wasn't going to switch out its idea of divine for the cult of personality, which is sort of a defining feature of classic fascism. I was wrong. And I should have known I was wrong, because this organization was supporting just that kind of fascist cult of personality and regimes around the world. But they had always sort of drawn a line in the United States. Along comes Donald Trump. And, you know, I think I understood most when I was wrong. I was covering a Trump rally in 2016 in Youngstown, Ohio. I was standing with a nice elderly couple, very sweet, kind of older hippies. And the guy started fantasizing about what he would do if he could get his hands on a CNN reporter, and really describing in graphic violence the beating he was going to give him. And his wife was just looking at him with such admiration. And this is the fantasy of the fist. This is the fantasy of the fist that can smash through democratic norms, can smash through truth. Fascism always has to challenge truth. So I recognized I was wrong, and I said, okay, here it is. There's always been authoritarianism and ingrained in American power. But that kind of fascism, cult of personality fascism, is here. What's going to happen with the Christian right and fundamentalism? What are they going to do? Are they really going to switch out Jesus for Trump? The answer is yes, they did. And what I look at as happening is that transaction that we all know, Donald Trump bringing Mike Pence into his campaign. But if you go back and you read Trump's books, and God help me, I have, you understand the so-called art of the deal that he has his ghostwriters write about. A good deal in his vision is transformational of both sides. And so it was for Christian nationalism and Trumpism, which was, it begins like, for your support, I'll give you this, that, and that, the other. But the kind of right-wing populist nationalism that Trump organized embraced the Christian theology of white evangelicalism. And Christian nationalism, in turn, abandoned any vestige of a love ethic, any claim to this is a peaceful idea, and openly and explicitly embraced the idea of a violent God, of God's chaos candidate, as they call Trump. So that's what happened. We had a great convergence. And while so many people were laughing at Trump's buffoonery and so on, they weren't paying attention to that really potent social movements, including right-wing ones, are coalitions, broad coalitions. This was bringing together so many folks and then using them. I look at QAnon. I've been writing a lot about QAnon lately. That network of conspiracy theories that began with a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C., and has now become this sort of global anti-COVID, pro-Kraken. I mean, it's so absurd, you can't even describe it. But there it is. And this idea that it's a fascist theology, and it's infected Christian nationalism. it's given Christian nationalism a way to stay in a kind of forever war. So when I think about that's sort of what just happened, I think, at least from this kind of Christian nationalist perspective, what's to come, I think, is really up in the air. I don't feel any confidence in any prediction. I look at folks who are saying, is this just a grift? Is he planning on running in 24? Is he still looking for ways to seize power? Because I don't think I think the prospect of violent coup has diminished, but it's certainly not passed. Things can change. But which is it? What is he really up to? And I think the answer is yes. He's up to all of them. In the same way that this is a convergence of movements, it becomes flexible. And I think we do have to understand that what makes this movement potent and powerful is it's fairly malleable. It can move quickly. So going forward, I think the threats that I see as most disturbing to me, I see two. And I think they can survive with or without Trump. You know, maybe Trump fades away. It doesn't matter. Trumpism will go on. One is this kind of convergence of QAnon and Christian nationalism. The way that this sort of the craziness of the conspiracy theories of QAnon have infected Christian nationalism, but Christian nationalism has given it one of the best organizing machines in the world. How did Trump win in the first time? They turned out the vote like nobody's business. They did get votes. They'll steal things, but they also will get votes. And the other one, and I think is sort of an interesting thing as we pay attention to the central role of white supremacy and in this movement, I look at what I call police nationalism, which even has its own flag, the Blue Lives Matter flag, an American flag drained of color except for one blue stripe in the middle, created as the creator of the flag told me, says I created it as a response to Black Lives Matter. It was created as a in many ways a white supremacist flag. There's a popular meme you may have seen where that one stripe is stripped away and we see behind it the swastika, the Nazi flag. I get the sentiment, it's too easy. The flag is more versatile than that, and that's what makes it more dangerous. And maybe this is sort of where I come in and put a wrinkle in the conversation. We do have a Nazi problem, but we have worse than that. If only it were so simple as Daily Stormer and the Nazis. I think police nationalism is potent because it is such a versatile movement. It allows people to pursue white supremacy, and even as they deny to themselves that they're doing it. It's founded on a fetishization of explicitly brutal police force and implicitly racist idea of policing. And so it's a stab in the back flag, to put it shortly, and to sort of borrow from that classic sort of Nazi meme. The police, if only they could do if their hands were untied. That threat is still there. That threat goes on past whatever happens on January 20th. So what do we do? I sort of cede to my elders in Sri Lanka who have been through this and say, listen to them. Let's pay attention to South Korea and Sri Lanka and the activists and organizers. The one thing that I would contribute to it is I think of a quote from the worst president in US history so far. Is not Donald Trump, it's James Buchanan, I'd argue, is still James Buchanan, 1856 to 1860. He actually got to the Civil War that Trump is almost getting us there. He had one good line when people were saying, you know, they're urging him to impose civility. This is before the Civil War, debate about slavery and so on. And Buchanan, who was rotten in every way, said, nonetheless, he says, I'm not going to crush the conversation. He says, I like the noise of democracy. And the noise of democracy is not harmony. And I think right now we have to resist that temptation. We got rid of Trump. Oh, let's all, we showed that we're better than that. Hell no, we didn't. And it's not a time for unity. I don't think it is. It's a time for cacophony. It's a time for a noise of democracy. And I don't know, I'll hand it over to Andy and Coco who have more ideas about how to bring that noise, but that's what I want to hear, that noise.
Thank you so much, Jeff. That's a great note to end on. And I think you have one, the way that you pull the lens back and you really look at all of the different forces behind this coalition that came to power is really, I learned so much from it. And I think a very poorly understood aspect and something that never got enough attention in the media was this, the Christian fascist or Christian nationalist, the theocratic movement that was, as you said, this organizing machine that brought this regime to power. I forgot to say that you should follow both of these people on social media, on Twitter, at Indica, I-N-D-I-C-A. You can follow Indy, and at Jeff Charlotte. Charlotte is spelled S-H-A-R-L-E-T. And we're going to go to Andy now, who is not really on social media, but you can find his commentary on refusefascism.org and revcom.us, and you can see him every week on the RNL show. So Andy, we're going to hear from you now.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Coco. It's always great to see you. We've been working together these last 4 years remotely, and as we are tonight, and I'm really pleased to have read Indy's piece this week, and now to meet him and that running dog of neoliberalism that he has over there, and for Jeff Charlotte, I appreciate both of what you guys said, and you brought quite a bit to this conversation, which is as important now as it was when we began 4 years ago. So let me start with this. If you've had a recurring nightmare repeatedly jolt you awake, it can be a real problem and indeed dangerous to not find out where that's coming from and then work your way through it. For that source of terror lies deep and it can reassert itself. 4 years ago, as Coco said, Refuse Fascism said, this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. How prescient that was. How critical the understanding, the analysis, and the still urgent stand of what begins the pledge to the people of the world that we saw earlier in this broadcast from Refuse Fascism that begins with, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. In the name of humanity concentrates the grave danger that a fascist regime in the most powerful imperialist superpower in human history poses, not just to the people here, but to the people of the world and to the very earth that we live on. The Trump-Pence fascist regime came to power through the normal political processes of this system, and the regime represented, it pulled together, it cohered a whole section of the ruling class of this system who regarded and still do this American fascism as one possible resolution to the problems that this system faces in the world today. The Trump-Pence regime did not create the deep divisions in America, nor did it create climate change, nor nuclear weapons, let alone the triad of its fascist program, which Coco spoke of earlier, white supremacy, patriarchy, xenophobia, which is the hatred of foreigners, any more than it created the COVID crisis and the COVID virus. But what the Trump-Pence regime did do is it amplified and it put on steroids all of these pre-existing conditions. And to do so, it concentrated and fought for a different form of rule of this same system. It tore through what had been the political and the civic norms to rule, and here I quote, through reliance on open terror and violence, trampling on what are supposed to be civil and legal rights, wielding the power of the state and mobilizing our organized groups of fanatical thugs to commit atrocities against masses of people, particularly groups of people identified as enemies, undesirables, or dangers to society. All of this to implement their program of America First, an America of genocidal racism, the most toxic male supremacy, and the outright demonization and terrorizing of immigrants in concentration camps, with the children of refugees separated and put into cages as their families fled countries that the US and this capitalist imperialist system has devastated. Isn't this what they have done? And since they are not out of power yet, and 73 million people voted for them, with over 40% of those who voted in this election fervently convinced that Trump won and Biden stole the election and thus is illegitimate, along with their believing in worse, even worse, lunatic conspiracy theories, we must remain vigilant now and going forward. This is not going away. There will not be any return to normal, no return to normal. And any objective view of what this country does to millions of people within its borders and to the people of the world and to the planet, no one should want to return to normal for all the horrors that that brings here and around the world. Why? Because fascism, as I said, is one response to the contradictions of this system on the part of a section of those who rule this system. Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, has said the normal workings of this system will, quote, continue to wreak havoc on the world and the masses of people through the destruction of the environment, wars, massive displacement and desperation of desperate migration of people, on top of the ongoing savage inequalities, crushing exploitation and murderous oppression written into the DNA of the system and carried out by its enforcers, end quote. This continuing to wreak havoc on the world, quote, comes from an article whose title poses what I hope is a key takeaway from what I'm bringing to our conversation. Radical change is coming. Will it be emancipating or enslaving, revolutionary or reactionary? And I just want to say, for people who are new to tuning this in, I cite Bob Avakian repeatedly and I follow his lead because he has developed the science to more deeply explain where the problems of today's world comes from, what the strategy is for getting out of this mess, and what the methods and approaches should be to stay on track and actually build a far better world. The roots of fascism in America are really deep. At the organized mass core of this fascist movement is a Christian fascist movement, what Jeff called the Christian nationalist movement, a form of political Christian fundamentalism that has been organizing for decades. And one can draw a direct line from the fascism of the Trump-Pence regime with this Christian fundamentalist base to the Confederacy. A religious fervor of a return to the lost cause of a noble way of life, of unfettered, brutal white supremacy and patriarchy, each taking on genocidal proportions while wrapped in the MAGA American First package, an aggressive approach to the world, threatening nuclear annihilation that mirrors the aggressive individualism of their movement. My freedom means you might die, as they are fully aware that COVID disproportionately means Black and Latino lives. So I want to bring this to conclusion with 4 points. Number one, there can be no reconciliation with fascism. Trump did not divide us and Biden cannot unite us. Bob Avakian has pointed out that the minds of these fascists in power in the streets will not be changed by being nice to them. There can be no reconciliation with these fascists, whose grievances are based on fanatical resentment against any limitation on white supremacy, male supremacy, xenophobia, the hatred of foreigners, rabid American chauvinism, and the unrestrained plundering of the environment. And these are increasingly expressed in literally lunatic terms. There can be no reconciliation with this other than on the terms of the fascists, with all the terrible implications and consequences of that, end quote. No reconciliation with this other than on the terms of these fascists. If you compromise, if you conciliate, if you collaborate with fascism, which is what the Democrats have done and will do because they fundamentally represent the same system that has white supremacy, patriarchy, and the domination of the people of the world woven into its very functioning. It is the fuel of the engine of capitalism imperialism. So this is my second point, or it brings me to my second point. And to underscore it, number two, Biden and the Democratic Party, as representatives of the same system, cannot solve the underlying problems of this system, which caused so much unnecessary suffering to people here and around the world. A world of tens of hundreds of millions of refugees, of 150 million children locked in virtual slave child labor, of half of humanity, women confined and thwarted by a vicious patriarchy, of wars, of climate devastation, of racial and national oppression, and the crushing of spirits, and the squandering of human potential to the dictates of a system whose lifeblood is the exploitation of literally billions of people enforced through the brute power and reinforced through tradition's chains. Point three, the contention at the top of this society around the fascist Republican Party that runs deep into the institutions of this country is now in control of the Supreme Court. And after 4 years, it has forged and cohered a hardened fascist base that is not going away, but will continue to metastasize and contend for power. The struggle for any fundamental change in this society, and actually the ground for revolution, will be fought on this ground. It is a conflict that is likely to intensify. And it will be, as Bob Avakian has written, quote, a significant factor in the context of an all-out struggle between revolution and counter-revolution. Point four is there is a way to understand the nightmare of fascism and the workings of the system that gave rise to it. And there is a way for humanity to move beyond a system that perpetuates such unnecessary suffering. To get there requires the scientific method and approach of the new communism developed by Avakian, which stands in opposition to religious obscurantism, to conspiratorial lunacy, as well as to the relativism of the progressive community, that there are just individual truths or truths for different groups, but no objective, knowable reality. So look, there is a road, it's a hard road, towards an actual revolution to a radically new society on the road to real emancipation. And this is outlined in a constitution for a new socialist republic authored by Bob Avakian. So here I am issuing an invitation to take up this scientific approach of the new communism and for people to have the integrity and the courage of thinking critically, to not be bound by the conventions and what's popular today, but to aspire to understand what really could be a radically different and far better world for all of humanity. But the fight against fascism is not over. It is entering a new phase. But let's undertake this fight. Let's continue to fight together against fascism and indeed all the injustices that this system continually brings down on the people. And let's do so while digging into and discussing and debating the way out of all the outmoded madness that haunts the whole planet today. The Refuse Fascism pledge to the people of the world in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America, must continue to resonate far and wide and become not only a needed political and moral compass, but the organized expression of a network ready to act with nonviolent determination to not allow fascism to grow and terrorize humanity. And the next 50 plus days until Trump and Pence are actually gone from power do represent real and present danger. We must remain vigilant, and we must be ready to act. So to all who have taken up the call from refusefascism.org and to both of my fellow panelists and to you, Coco, all who have exposed the dangers of what we face, until Trump and Pence are gone, we should continue, as the pledge concludes, to hold firm to our determination to prevail over a regime that imperils the people of the world and the earth itself. And so with that, I want to thank you, Jeff and Indy, for joining Coco and myself in this broadcast of taking a look at what has happened over these past 4 years and these past few weeks and what's to come.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we've been listening to Jeff Charlotte, Coco Das, and Andy Z. You can see a video of the entire forum, including the opening statements we just heard, and a lively discussion. just go to the YouTube channel for Refuse Fascism or look for the link at refusefascism.org. Once again, that's refusefascism.org. You can also check out the Revolution Nothing Less show, the RNL show, on the YouTube channel, The RevComs. That's T-H-E-R-E-V, as in Victor, comms, C-O-M-S. We're going to hear two clips from a talk given in 2017. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible. This is Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, with slavery, genocide, and you think fascism can't happen here?
The terrible truth is that with some notable exceptions, including the very significant exception of the generation that came of age in the 1960s, white people overall have either been directly involved in or have supported or at least passively accepted all this throughout the history of this country. During the whole time of slavery, during the decades of Jim Crow segregation and Ku Klux Klan terror, when repeatedly black people, in particular black men, who did not know their place, or perhaps sometimes without even knowing why, angered some white person, would be lynched, while crowds of white people would gather in a picnic atmosphere, vying to get parts of the mutilated body of the black person hanging from a tree. And photographs of this were turned into postcards that were sold throughout the country. Yes, this is true. An ugly, shameful truth. Today, with the repeated murders of black people by police, in the rare instances when the murdering cop is actually indicted, there are white people who sit on juries and refuse to convict. And still too many white people who claim to care about justice and will take to social media to denounce far less outrageous and sometimes even trivial acts cannot find it in themselves to be outraged and moved to act about this. If the police wantonly shot down dogs over and over again, there would be a huge outcry throughout society, including from people who are silent or make excuses when this is done to human beings of darker skin. Now, it would be wrong and harmful to ignore the fact that there are white people, in particular younger white people, but others as well, who have taken to the streets to protest these murders and who have put forward the stand, white silence is violence. It is complicity in murder. This is, of course, a good thing, and it needs to happen much more on a much greater scale. But given the actual history of this country down to today, does it really make sense to insist, as some people still stubbornly do, that fascism couldn't happen here? Not in this country, with our democracy and our great traditions.
That was Bob Avakian with Slavery, Genocide, and You Think Fascism Can't Happen Here? And I should mention that you can find the entire film, The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go, In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept the Fascist America, A Better World is Possible, at revcom.us. That's R-E-V as in Victor, C-O-M.us. Now, we're going to hear the direct line from the Confederacy to the fascists of today.
And the fact is that in this country, with its whole history of genocide, slavery, and racism, any form of fascism, including one basing itself on Christian supremacy, any urge to restore past greatness cannot help but be bound together with white supremacy. The Republican Party has been moving in a fascist direction since the late 1960s, with further leaps since then to becoming more and more openly fascist. And in running for president in 1968, Richard Nixon adopted what has been called the Southern Strategy, which the Republican Party has followed ever since. This is a direct appeal to white supremacy, to the racism of white people, particularly, though not only, in the southern states, who are enraged that black people are not staying in their place. The Republican Party is not the party of Lincoln, as it sometimes demagogically claims to be. It has become much more the party of the Confederacy. With Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party took another leap on the road of fascism. Reagan very deliberately began his campaign for president in 1980 in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where in 1964, three civil rights workers were kidnapped and brutally murdered by white supremacists. There, in Philadelphia, Mississippi, Reagan proclaimed his support for states' rights, which, particularly in the South, have long been code words for white supremacist lynch mobism. And after George W. Bush took things still further in a fascist direction, including the open use of torture and the active promotion of Christian fundamentalism, the Trump-Pence regime has made the leap into all-out fascism. There is a direct line from the Confederacy to the fascists of today, and a direct connection between their white supremacy, their open disgust and hatred for LGBT people as well as women, their willful rejection of science and the scientific method, their raw America First jingoism and trumpeting of the superiority of Western civilization, and their bellicose wielding of military power, including their expressed willingness and blatant threats to use nuclear weapons to destroy countries. The truth, another terrible truth that must be faced, is that in the context of profound and acute contradictions that are asserting or reasserting themselves in ways that are tearing at the very fabric and deepening cracks in the foundation of this country, at the same time as the American empire is facing serious challenges internationally, fascism is one possible resolution of this on the terms of this system and its ruling class, even as this is a horror for humanity.
That was Bob Avakian with The Direct Line from the Confederacy to the Fascists of Today. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom, but trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan, then we take